Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:17 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time, Standard Time, and today is November 18th. Well, Apple has been pushing on the upside for consecutive weeks. It's looking really quite overextended relative to the trend mean. There has definitely been some acceleration on the upside, considering the fact that it was trading at $150 at the beginning of the year. It's at $267 now, so that is an incredibly impressive advance. I thought it would be rather interesting to look at the logarithmic scale chart, because we do get some additional information there, particularly when we put the 200-week moving average on there, which of course is equivalent to the 1,000-day moving average. And in fact, all the way up from the lows in 2003, the major reactions have all found support in the region of that 1,000-day moving average. Therefore, we can also start to think that this is one of the primary trend consistencies of what has been an incredibly impressive bull market over 16 years. And it would really require a sustained move below it in order to confirm a clear change of the secular trend. That doesn't necessarily mean that we can't have sharp reactions. Certainly we can see, if we go back to the arithmetic scale chart, that Apple is quite capable of pulling back in a very aggressive manner. For example, it went from 100 to 50 and change in 2012 and 13. It went from 225 to 150 at the end of 2018. So, but we definitely can see that there is a clear example of acceleration here. This is about as overextended relative to the trend mean as it has been at any point over the course of the last decade. And what that suggests is there is obviously a rush on to try and accumulate this share. Then we can also look at Microsoft. The pace of the advance is certainly picking up. When we look at the log scale chart here, then we can also see that the pace of Microsoft's advance has been completely different. That's also because the bull market hasn't been going on for nearly as long. Microsoft went sideways for the better part of 17 years before adopting a subscription business model and breaking on the upside. Now the pace of the advance is continuing to pick up, but it's still very consistent in nature. We don't have the same evidence of acceleration that we do on Apple. The primary consistency characteristic is the staircase step sequence uptrend. Each of the ranges is one above another. There are periods of time when it does become quite overextended, and each of those has been resolved with a pullback towards the mean. But certainly the breakout that we had 4 weeks ago does suggest that the pace of the advance is picking up. One of the reasons that I'm looking at both Microsoft and Apple in here today is because there were a number of comparisons between the total market cap for just those two shares is now greater than the entire market cap of the Russell 2000. It's also greater than the entire consumer staples sector. Well, when we look at consumer staples, then they have also broken up and out of a three-year range. The pace of the advance has not been nearly as aggressive as that for either Microsoft or for Apple, but it is pushing on the upside. The Russell 2000 has been largely range-bound now for most of this year, and it continues to hover here around this 1600-point level. It really does need to sustain a move up and out of that range to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Well, when we then think about the other mega-cap shares that are not doing quite as well as either Microsoft or Apple, Amazon is the big standout. It's been largely range-bound for most of this year. It's steadying in here today. It's so far been able to hold the $1,700 area. It's been bouncing from that area for, at least on a number of occasions since June. $1,700 had been an area of resistance all the way back from December of last year. So we are potentially looking at past resistance becoming future support, but it needs to sustain a move above the $1,800 area to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Google has also been one of those shares that has been able to break on the upside, and it was in negative territory today, certainly not in a dynamic manner, but it is, as long as it is sustaining this break up and away from the range, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But one thing that we can say for sure is that we've had a very impressive breakout on the wider markets. And we do have short-term overbought conditions. There's no real evidence yet that we have seen anything other than a pause going on. But the reality is, eventually, it will roll over into a corrective phase. What I think is important to realize, though, is that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. That once a market breaks out of its range, whoops, didn't need to do that. When we look at a range, then when you get a breakout, you can very quickly go overbought. That's exactly, for example, what we're seeing with the RSI right now. The RSI is calculated based on the volatility of the market over the preceding period of time. And because we had a very involatile period, then an arranging environment overall, it's quite normal to see that a market can go overextended and stay overextended for a reasonably prolonged period before you then eventually do get a somewhat larger consolidation. So we're not quite there yet with the S&P 500, or indeed for the NASDAQ. It is, I think, largely inevitable that we're going to get some consolidation eventually. But I think it is also worth remembering that when we look at the consistency of these trends, that they have tended to go sideways for approximately 18 months. And when they do break out, then those breakouts have been incredibly persistent. So this is, I think, normal, and that we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside as long as the region of the trend mean, which is defined by the 200-day moving average, continues to hold. Certainly a move below that level from current regions would suggest a failed upside break. We don't have any evidence of that just yet. I think oil prices are also really worth monitoring at the present time. The oil price was down about a dollar today. It's still pausing below the region of the trend mean. Prices right now are just about where they were in December of last year. There's been a great deal of volatility up and down in between that period of time. But the broad picture since April has been that of a clear downward bias. And a sustained move above the $65 area on Brent is going to be required to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The Saudi Arabian stock market is about to get a very significant additional listing. It was in positive territory today, and it has held the sequence of higher reaction lows. Saudi Arabia has been uniquely unsuccessful in touting the sale of Saudi Aramco internationally. Investors have taken the attack that took place, I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was at the beginning of October, on Saudi Arabia's oil infrastructure as a clear sign that there is geopolitical risk to the valuation. That has resulted in tepid demand. Saudi Arabia is looking at a valuation of $1.6 trillion for the company. It's the most profitable company in the world, and yet nobody wants it because of the very significant geopolitical risk that it represents. They're only selling about 5% of the company, and it's probably going to go to domestic investors who are going to be able to borrow on a leveraged basis to accumulate that position. Quite how they're going to get the leverage past the the Sharia way of thinking about interest and leverage is quite another question, but they're certainly doing that. The reality, though, is that what Saudi Arabia really wants to do is to get a valuation against which they can borrow, and it is increasing the borrowing of the company is, I think, the ultimate aim of the IPO. As long as the sequence of higher reaction lows, though, holds on the Tadawul index, I think there's the potential that we're going to get continued higher to lateral ranging. Then when we think about what's going on in China, well, there is obviously an effort underway to try and support the stock market around this 3,000 level on the Shanghai A shares. I continue to think that the Shenzhen B shares are by far the more important arbiter of exactly what's going on in the real economy, and it was in positive territory in here today and continuing to hold the 900 point level, if only barely. The Hang Seng was in positive territory today. Now, the bigger question is whether it is going to follow through on the upside in here tomorrow. If it can, well, then we'll be talking about a higher reaction low. I am rather reminded of Baron de Rothschild talking about buying when there's blood in the streets. Certainly there's some evidence of that over the course of the last few months. And the Hang Seng does not have a demanding multiple. Of course, it is all dependent on what the trajectory for growth is and what the likelihood is that some kind of negotiated settlement can be reached to try and de-escalate the violence that is going on within the city. So, obviously, this is a rather interesting market to monitor at present. And the sequence of higher reaction lows suggests that investors are at least willing to give the benefit of the doubt to a potential deal being found between the protesters and the government. But I do think we are in early days just yet. When we then look at what's going on in the gold market, gold has steadied here from around this $1,450 area. Now, there has been a sequence of lower rally highs since the beginning of September. There was a short-term oversold condition. I think it's likely we're going to see an unwinding of that. I think the most remarkable the thing we've seen here for the gold price is that the size of the pullback has been relatively modest, considering that it rallied by over $200 from the low in May. It's only given up about $100 of that during what is effectively a three-month period of consolidation. And that's very orderly for what is characteristically a very volatile instrument. When we look at the weekly chart, it's very clear that we have the rounding base formation. We've had the impressive breakout. This continues to look like a first step above the base. It might yet come back and test the region of the trend mean. That certainly can't be fully discounted. But so far, this continues to look like a first step above the base. Then when we think about gold shares, the fact that gold prices continue to hold up, that's still really very good news for the gold mining sector. They've largely conditioned themselves to be profitable in the region of about $1,100. So with prices much closer to $1,450, then that there is the clear potential that we're going to see outsized profits coming through from the sector. Now, we don't have the same rounding characteristic in gold shares. They certainly had an incredible move in 2016 and a lengthy period of consolidation. Now it is just about in the region of the trend mean. This looks like a consolidation in the region of the upper side of the evolving, still evolving base formation. And it's a sustained move above 30 will clearly confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I do rather think that's likely. There was a lot of commentary at the end of last week in the gold market and among commentators that there was a big outflow from ETFs. I think it is worth putting that into some perspective, that we had almost 12 million ounces of gold added to ETF holdings from the first quarter of this year through to quite recently. That got all the way back up to the highs put in 2012. I don't think that we are likely to see anything other than some pause in consolidation here. I think the potential for ETF holdings to push on and exceed the highs in 2012 is really quite likely, other than the short-term risk of some consolidation. ETF holdings are going to represent an even larger, I think, source of demand for the metal. And I think, and this is going purely off of memory, back in 2012, ETF holdings represented, I think, the fifth largest store of gold, particularly relative to central banks. It's probably not quite that high right now because of central bank buying over the last few years, but I think there is ample potential for it to rise further during what remains an early stage bull market in the precious metal. Then when we look at what's going on in terms of 10-year treasury yields, the yield was a little bit tighter in here today, but there is clearly this sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of September. There is clear evidence of support being found around the 1.5% level, and I think as long as that 1.5% area continues to hold, then there is potential that we're going to see yields continue to push on the upside. I'm going to post this chart in here today, and it's the average retail price for gasoline in California. It looks really quite different to the oil price because it's still really quite close to where it was trading back in 2008. We've had companies like Ford come out with plans that they're going to release an electric Mustang, and it looks like an SUV rather than a super-powered sedan car. They're saying that that is going to be profitable on day one with car one. I'm rather skeptical, and I think that there is a lot of financial engineering going into trying to make that claim true. Tesla, on the other hand, is going to be releasing its plans for what it anticipates to be the F-150 pickup killer, and that's going to be on Thursday. The share, however, looks really quite overextended following a rocket higher move over the last 4 weeks. So it's right in the region of the upper side of the range that persisted between 2017 and 18. This is a natural area where we might anticipate some pause and consolidation. We're increasingly in a much more competitive environment in the automotive sector. Some of these companies are just not going to survive. Tesla doesn't have the same baggage in terms of its legacy production capacity, which is a plus. It does have baggage in terms of the SolarCity acquisition and the class action lawsuit that continues to develop with regard to that. And of course, it has to slay the profitability dragon as well, and it hasn't quite been able to do that. There are so many moving parts in transportation right now that it is difficult to pay attention to. But the one, I think, important point is that regardless of whether it is Uber or Lyft eventually goes bankrupt, then there is probably still going to be a market for ride sharing. Then when we think about the automotive sector, they are all moving towards electric vehicles. Consumers aren't really going to have much of a choice in terms of their drivetrain of their vehicle going forward. It's either going to be fully electric or potentially hydrogen fuel cell and hybrid electric. Of course, hydrogen is one of the primary feedstock today for hydrogen is natural gas. And natural gas prices remain really quite low. And that is, I think, a fantastic example of economics 101. The longer we get natural gas prices trading in the $2 to $3 area, the greater the likelihood is that there are going to be additional new sources of demand. And whether that is going to be from hydrogen fuel cells or whether it is going to be from innovative ways to grow food or to convert on a cellular basis natural gas into food, there is ample potential that we're going to see additional sources of demand arise, the lower prices and the longer prices stay at a low level. When we then think about the medium term, well, we know that Amazon and a number of the online retailers are underperforming. But then I think it's also worth considering that Walmart continues to push on the upside. It wasn't quite able to hold all of its gain on Friday, but it was in positive territory in here today. That does suggest we're probably due at least some consolidation. Then discounters have also been among the best performers in the retail sector over the course of the last decade, and that remains really very clear with the performance of TJX and Ross stores. Those are obviously the winners in the retail sector. The bigger point, of course, is that something I definitely see more evidence of is there is increasing demand from some of the online vendors, from sellers, that they are insisting now that sellers advertise in order to gain placement. That is the adoption of an advertising strategy by the online marketplaces to compete, I think, or perhaps take a note out of the playbook from Google. Of course, the bigger question then is the willingness of the online sellers to adopt to that kind of business strategy, because they may be spending their ad spend somewhere else, whether that is with Facebook or Google. I think that is part of the reason why we're seeing the underperformance of companies like Etsy and like Walmart or eBay, that they are trying to fiddle with their business models. And there is, I think, a potential that that hasn't worked particularly well. So that is the big question then is, are we going to see oil prices break on the upside? I think that is by far the biggest risk, considering the fact that because of regulation, gasoline prices are already really very high. We haven't yet had the widespread rollout of electric vehicles. Eventually, that rollout will moderate the influence of oil on the economic cycle. And oil prices are at a rather interesting juncture. If Saudi Arabia can manufacture additional upward pressure on the oil price to flatter the valuation of Saudi Aramco, then that will act as a headwind to global growth. If, on the other hand, oil prices fail here and sustain a move below $60, well, then that is going to obviously have an impact on commodity producers, but it is also going to act as a tailwind to consumption and probably further influence the potential for additional upside. When we have had an inverted yield curve, then we do have to pay attention to the fact that it's usually not the inverted yield curve itself that creates a recessionary environment. And quite often, it's a lengthy period of time after the inversion that we start to see the yield curve starting to surge higher. It's usually when you've taken out the 50 basis point level that we need to be particularly vigilant in terms of the stock market. But usually by that time, the stock market has already started to roll over. And we just don't see evidence of that right now. Well, What the potential, therefore, is that we could potentially be somewhere like 2005, and I think it is still very relevant that if we go back and look at previous inversions, the stock market went up 50% in the late 1990s before the yield curve eventually started to surge on the upside, and the market peaked after an acceleration. It went up 30% after the first inversion between 2005 and 2007. The market has only just broken on the upside. There is clear potential that we're going to see a repeat of that before we get a slowing of growth, before the consumer comes under pressure, or before the weight of it. And I think that this is something that we do have to pay attention to, that it may not be that oil prices surge on the upside, but rather that we see an increasingly onerous weight of regulation costs coming to bear not only on the economy but on the consumer, that could potentially then act as a headwind to consumption. That is something that is potentially out there on the horizon, and perhaps not yet really evident in the statistics. But as long as stock markets continue to hold these breakouts, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.